them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Cafe Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm well indeed, and I'm struck by a parallel that's happened in my life, and sort of an interesting thing where the show has come back to, well, to bite me in a certain way. One of the things I really like is, and if you're out there in listener land or podcast land, by all means, email us, Francis@restaurantguysradio.com or Mark@restaurantguysradio.com. We love to know where you are and that you like the show. It's very important to us. And I get emails all the time about things we talk about on the show, and people will actually, and very gratifying to us, mm-hmm. will change their buying habits or their eating habits based on the knowledge that comes from some of our guests or what we talk about in our show. Well, I had that hit a little closer to home when my fiance, who loves artificially flavored microwaved buttered popcorn, listened to our show where we talked about...
We recently did a show where we exposed the popcorn lung,
which is a
malady.
There's a disease that exists only among people who work in factories that have artificial butter flavor in it. I don't know if there's any connection there, but it's called popcorn lung, and it becomes very hard to exhale. It's a very serious disease, not to be messed around with. And it made the news because for the first time, someone who doesn't work in a popcorn factory got this disease. He had buttered popcorn twice a day.
He was
years.
A popcorn inhaler.
And what he used to do is he'd open the bag of popcorn.
Now on the same list as glue inhaler, by the way.
Well, and
popcorn inhaler.
And he would inhale. He'd open the bag of steaming popcorn and inhale that wonderful fake butter smell. Well, he's got popcorn lung now. So my fiance now says, you know, damn you, I can't have popcorn now. What have you done to me? So what we did was we looked around my apartment, because she loves popcorn, and we found an old thing of Jiffy Pop, probably 7 years old, and popped it. And I browned some butter with a little bit of garlic and salt in and put it on there, and we loved it. So what happened recently was Jennifer said, I need popcorn. I said, I'll go to the supermarket and I'll get some Jiffy Pop. So what I don't realize, because I haven't shopped for popcorn in 7 to 9 years, that was a 9-year-old thing at Jiffy Pop.
Is Jiffy Pop?
They don't have Jiffy Pop anymore.
I think Jiffy Pop still exists.
No,
but.
They do.
Oh, they do?
In the rare store, you'll find it. And believe me, I went to 6. But when you find it, you can only find the artificially buttered flavored Jiffy Pop.
Oh, hysterical.
Yeah. So
can I tell you something, though, that you really need to know if you're going to pop popcorn?
What?
Oil, a pot, lid.
Well, you're stealing my thunder. What I did was I took a Dutch oven. I have a cast iron Dutch oven, which is perfect.
Francis, if you're the only person on the planet using a $300 popcorn popper.
Well, it's an oven. Now, you can do a lot of things. You can do a rabbit. You can do. But here's the thing. I didn't burn a single kernel.
Francis has a perfect ceramic oven.
No, it's just plain cast iron, but okay. It's well seasoned because I use it a lot. Mm-hmm. And what that cast iron spreads out the heat very, very, very evenly.
Yes, I'm sure that it's a great vessel for that.
So here's the deal. What I did was I took a third of a cup of oil. Now, you need to use a high smoke point oil, like canola or safflower, because if you use olive oil, it'll start to
corn smoke. Oil, people use it, you know.
Yeah, I don't use corn oil. I don't believe it. I don't like that. But, you can use corn oil.
Corn oil to cook your popcorn in. How bizarre.
Yeah, I don't like it. I just don't like it. But in any event, I used olive oil that first night, but I've since gone out and bought some high smoke point oil, because when it starts to smoke, actually, there's a lot of literature out there that says when oil starts to smoke, it becomes carcinogenic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm against that. But I took it in the Dutch oven. I turned the heat all the way up to heat the Dutch oven through, and then I turned the heat down and let it cool down a little bit so you had a nice, hot, warm, evenly hot oven. And then I put a third of a cup of oil in, half a cup of popcorn, and I just put the lid on top. Now, shaking that thing was a little hard, but you really didn't even have to shake it very much.
Yeah, it just pops.
And not a burnt kernel, not an unpopped kernel. And, Frank, you know, it doesn't. If just in case you've never made popcorn outside of a bag or a Jiffy Pop thing, it doesn't pop that much. I mean, you know, you need to leave the lid on.
Yeah, it needs a lid.
But if it pops a little bit while the lid's off. So it was great. So there's my popcorn.
The mallet. Warning, though, that for all of you people who've only used the microwave or the Jiffy Pop method, don't put too much popcorn in.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
that could be a real mess.
But you can, but it's cheaper this way. It's and it tastes so much better.
It's so much better. It's just so much better. It's just one of those foods that just is tremendously better. My issue now with my wife, which she curses me on,
yeah,
is Teflon.
Ooh.
We, you know, I got to throw out all the Teflon pots. I got to scrub these stainless steel, and I curse you.
Teflon, we covered this in a former show as well. Teflon is... he's coming under a lot of controversy right now. I think it's DuPont that makes Teflon. I'm not sure. But they're saying that, listen, there's no problem with Teflon at all as long as it doesn't heat to 500 degrees. Okay, I'm putting it on the oven. And if I forget it for a second, what's the problem? They also say if you have birds, you shouldn't keep them in the kitchen while cooking on your Teflon pan. Okay, remember the canary in the coal mine? Not good enough for the bird to breathe, not good enough for me to breathe. And here's the double whammy for microwave popcorn. Those bags... inside I'm often coated with Teflon. Really?
and you're heating them in the microwave, getting them as hot as you possibly
really
can.
But the other thing about popcorn is, I don't know, we can go on a riff on anything, can't we? No, I'm really fascinated with this. The other thing about popcorn is, it's wonderful for butter. It's not good for you. It could make it taste really good, in my opinion. Sea salt, really good sea salt, and about a stick of butter. But you can brown that butter and throw anything in it at all. Mm-hmm. It tastes, if you haven't had it in a while... popped popcorn in a pan tastes completely different than air popped popcorn or microwave popcorn.
Well, first of all, it's crunchier. First of all, it's got a different texture, a better texture to it than no matter what the microwave bag tells you that it's going to stay crispy or do whatever. The texture is different and better from a regular popcorn.
But here's something to look out for when you pop stuff at home. One is you don't want to put too much popcorn in there. The second is you need to. I used a cast iron Dutch oven, right? Mm-hmm. You need to use a thick pan because you will burn the kernels if you use a thin pan.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that Jennifer does. She does use a cheap pan to cook her popcorn in, but it's her popcorn pan.
Mm.
So she bought a $20 or $30 popcorn pan, and that's her popcorn pan, and she has a lid. And if she burns the bottom and inside or out, she doesn't care because it's her popcorn
pan.
But I don't
want the popcorn kernels to be burnt. You know,
you're just fussy.
I want really good popcorn. But the other thing is we had a food scientist on, Dr. Stephen Witherly, who talked about how popcorn is one of the perfect foods because of what you can add to it. If you add an oil or a butter and a salt and something like garlic, which is one of those really high-powered foods, it's really a remarkable snack. Because you can combine, it has a textural component to it, and you can combine all of the different elements of any dish over popcorn. And yeah, you can do that in a bagged popcorn, but if you make it fresh yourself, it really is bright and alive.
I mean, popcorn, like a lot of things, like risotto, like mashed potatoes, like a lot of things, is a great vehicle for other types of flavors. Then you add to the component that it changes texture in your mouth, that it kind of melts away in your mouth. That's a very pleasurable thing for us as humans.
Well, in a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking with Phoebe Damrosch. Phoebe was a server at Per Se Restaurant in New York City, and she's written a book about it called Service Included: 4-Star Secrets of an Eavesdropping Waiter. We'll be talking with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Phoebe Damrosch. She was a captain, one of the only female captains at a 4-star restaurant in New York City, Per Se. She's written a book about it. It's called Service Included: 4-Star Secrets of an Eavesdropping Waiter.
Phoebe, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. What's poppin'?
Wow, that you were listening to the first segment. That's great. I love your book, Phoebe.
Thank you.
Great stuff.
I love your restaurant.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Actually, in the spirit of full disclosure, we met Phoebe and Andre, the gentleman who is her paramour, about whom she writes in this book, at the restaurant long before this book came out. What was that, about almost 2 years ago now?
I think so. Yeah, it was around Christmas time, and I remember Mark gave us a great tour.
Yeah, he's great at that.
The tour guide, that's what they call me in my other life.
In fact, I was really impressed with the service at the restaurant. You have a great sommelier, too.
Thanks. Yeah,
Thank you. John
is really terrific.
Yeah.
So, well, you suckered me in the book, though, Phoebe, because this is supposed to be a book about service in a restaurant, service in one of the best restaurants in the country. I opened the book, and last night, I got the research on it a couple of days ago, but I actually read it through last night, and it's a love story, isn't it?
It is a love story, but not... you know, love with food and restaurants and a man.
in that order.
Exactly.
But I think that what I said to Mark as we were driving in today, I said, you know, I think that people who are in the restaurant business will view this primarily as a love story, and maybe people who aren't in the restaurant business will view it as a story about the restaurant.
Exactly.
Right, seeing the inner workings of the restaurant.
Exactly, and the two groups tell me, well, I had to skip some parts, and you know, it got a little too lovey for me in one situation. And then people who don't know food say, you know, it got a little complex. I was really confused. I'm not a big food person, but I like the story.
You know, and I didn't realize it until I was done with it at the end. So why don't you give a brief synopsis of the book, and then we'll talk about the book in more detail.
Well, Waiting Tables started out as a day job because I was a writer first, and then I started working as a busboy at a little cafe in Brooklyn, and then worked my way up to Per Se, and in that journey ended up falling in love with restaurants and food. And then by the end of my time at Per Se, I was ready to leave again. And then I think I would go back to restaurants in some way, maybe as an owner, later in life when I'm ready to stay in one spot.
I was going to say, I'll put you on for Tuesdays and Thursdays. You're closing Saturday night.
I loved it, but it was exhausting, and it wasn't something I wanted to do forever, the waiting tables part.
But, you know, people who can be really dedicated to this business, and I really believe this, people who can be really, really dedicated to this business and passionate about food and passionate about wine and passionate about what they do, regardless of whether it's the restaurant business or not, those people are going to be more passionate in their extracurriculars as well.
I think so. I think, yeah, I'm always surprised when I meet waiters who aren't into their job and who don't throw themselves into it, at least for 8 hours of their shift.
You know, that's one of the things that I like about restaurants. I was a student for a while, and I was a grad student for a while, and Mark worked in a couple of different things. But one of the things I really liked about, we were bartenders more than waiters, although mm-hmm. we did wait tables occasionally, was that for 8 hours, and I actually, it's funny, because I got this before I owned my own place.
Mm-hmm.
But for 8 hours, I could go and, you know, I was working full time, I had a full load as a grad student, and I could go to work, and for 8 hours, all the care in the world left me, and
yes.
I was focused on that 8 hours and being awesome and being with food and being with people and being great. And then, you know, as a student or in many other jobs, it's always with you. You go to bed, you didn't get the thing done, the thing is over
mm-hmm.
your head. This
yeah.
is a passionate thing, there's a lot of knowledge, but you've got 8 hours, it's performance time, and it's over.
Yeah, and it's a social job, and it's also one that I think is really good for artists because it's people watching.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what was, you know, the best part of the job for me is just the conversations I overheard and the situations that I witnessed, you know, seeing people from an angle that they're not used to being seen. They forget that the server is there watching.
Bit of a fly on the wall.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
You know, you're the second person to say that to us. A good friend of ours, a guy named Kurt Wenzel, he's written three novels now. His first novel was Lit Life, which mm-hmm. leaned on restaurants a lot. And that was the novel that let him quit his job as a waiter and be a novelist full time. But people always say about artists, well, you work in the restaurant business because you can make your money, you know, in a decent amount of time, and it's flexible. It's a flexible job.
Right.
But the other reason, I mean, if someone's involved in the human condition as an artist, it's to observe human interaction.
Right.
It's
a real look into people.
Right. Well, that's why I live in New York City too.
Mm-hmm.
You just see the characters everywhere you go.
Do you miss it now that you're out of the restaurant side of things?
I miss the social aspect. It's hard to take a break and just go to my own kitchen and not have someone to, you know, complain about, complain with. It gets a little lonely.
Well, we got an hour. You can complain all you want.
And paycheck too.
Why do you think? You know, we do hiring and training, and we work in restaurants ourselves, and still, you know, we've owned our own for 15 years, but we've been working in them for over 20.
Mm-hmm.
I think restaurant people work harder than most other people.
Yeah.
And cooks and waiters in particular. Why is that? Why are people so driven in this industry that they maybe aren't in others?
Well, I think that you have someone's happiness in your hands, and they're staring at you, and it's, you can't avoid that. And so, you know, everything that a person wants and all the anticipation that goes into trying to figure out what they want before they do, and it's something that you have to do in the moment, or the person's going to be upset with you in the moment. So I think it keeps you on your toes.
I want to talk about, we're going to take a break for a commercial, but I want to talk about when you come back, anticipating what someone wants before they even know what they want, which is the ultimate skill of a great waiter. We'll be back in just a moment talking with Phoebe Damrosch about her book, Service Included. You can find out more about it and even pick it up on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, Central Jersey, 1450. It's 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Captain Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. We're talking with Phoebe Damrosch about her book, Service Included, in her experiences at Per Se Restaurant as a captain.
So, Phoebe, in your book, one of the things that you mentioned is that is what great service is all about, and anticipation being an important part of great service. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
All right. Well, definitely trying to figure out what someone wants before they do is hard, but is possible. And I think it comes down to two things. One is just anticipation, which comes from observing them. So I've noticed that when people start fiddling on the bottom of their glass and sort of moving it around a little bit, usually it's starting to get empty, maybe ready to be filled, maybe they want to order something else. And I think it's an unconscious thing that they do that gives you a clue. Or when someone starts to move up in their chair a little bit, you know they're about to stand up and you can pull their chair out from behind them.
Observing their body language, very important part of what we do.
Or they come in smelling like smoke, and then you think, in about two courses, they're probably going to want to go have another cigarette. And then you try to figure out how to talk to them maybe about that so that the chef can slow down and their food won't be sitting and getting cold.
And you never, and graciousness is never really saying, hey, sir, you really smell like smoke. Do you need a cigarette break?
Right. No, it's more going over, how is everyone? Does anyone need to take a little break? Give them the out.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You know,
rather than you smell like the Marlboro Man.
Right. And then also I think eavesdropping is one of the most important things you can do. And it sounds rude, but most people won't complain directly to you, but they'll complain to the friend next to them. Mm-hmm. You know, this fish is a little cold. And if you're there and you hear that, then you can bring it up and then, you know, without telling them they smell like smoke or you know their fish is cold, but just, you know, how is everything? Or if you think they're not going to answer, to be very direct, I think maybe there's a problem with the fish.
One of the things that we have the most trouble with teaching servers, and we take a lot of folks who don't have a lot of restaurant experience, who don't have a lot of, like, high fine dining caliber restaurant experience, and you seem to like our servers, so we do an okay job.
Yeah.
But is teaching the young captain, or the new captain, because it's not about age, it's about experience, teaching the new captain that when it's slow, when it's quiet, to stand in the room and listen and watch.
Mm-hmm. Without anybody knowing you're listening and watching.
Well, and it's because not only if that table needs something at that moment, you're there and it's magic, but with years of experience of doing that, you begin to learn more, like you said. Someone starts to move their glass in a certain way, and you just, as a waiter, you get a sense. And maybe you don't even know why you know.
Right.
But you know it's time to go over and do something.
Yeah. And also, when we're dining in restaurants, you look up when you need to make eye contact with the waiter, you need something. And it's so much better to just make eye contact and have them come over than have to, you know, wave them over from across the room, which always feels really rude.
Or wait for them to come by.
Right.
And you know, this is something that I don't think any restaurant is perfect at. Per Se probably comes closer than any. Mm-hmm. But when the waiter trying to get into people's heads that, you know, just looking at your table and then walking away doesn't do it because they've got to see you as well as you see them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have an outdoor cafe, and one of the things in the early years of the restaurant that I had to train people was you can't just go to the restaurant door, look at them, and see that they're okay. You actually have to go out, make eye contact, and come back.
See what's in their mind. Hey, we'll be back in just a moment talking about restaurant service at one of the best restaurants in the world with Phoebe Damrosch. Her book is Service Included. Back in just a moment. 1450 WCTC time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Phoebe Damrosch was a captain at a four-star restaurant, one of very few females to hold that position. She's written a book about her experience called Service Included, Four-Star Secrets of an Eavesdropping Waiter, and she's here talking to us today about it. Phoebe, you were a captain at one of our favorite restaurants at Per Se in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. One of the world's favorite restaurants.
We're not alone in that. We have a lot of people who are in the industry who listen to our show and to our podcast. But we also have a lot of people who listen in the broadcast area who aren't restaurant people and who maybe have never been to a restaurant where it's, you know, basically, before you start adding in beverage, it's $250 a person to have dinner there, right?
Right.
What makes a restaurant in New York worth $250? And then specifically, what kind of service should you expect for you know, not $800 with wine for dinner for two?
Right.
What do I expect? What makes it so special?
Well, I remember having this conversation with my mother before I dragged her in there, and I wanted her to come and see what I was doing so that she would understand that it wasn't just any job waiting tables. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but, you know, I wanted her to know what was going on. And it's an expensive meal, but I think of it more as travel or entertainment. Like, you'd buy a plane ticket or you'd buy an expensive concert ticket. It's an experience. You're paying for a memory and not just for calories.
So what does the server do to add to that memory? What happens in the service in that kind of place where that's different from the service in, you know, your local tavern where there's a very friendly, competent,
right,
happy waiter?
Well, one thing is that every section has about three or four tables. So you're getting very individual attention. And then in each three or four tables, you have a captain and then a back server. The captain is the person who's sort of in charge of the table, takes the wine order, pours the wine. The back server is the person that serves the bread and the water. So by the end of your three-hour meal, you know these people fairly well, plus managers and runners and coffee servers.
Sommelier.
Right, I think, to say there's only two people waiting on the table does it in service, I think.
Right.
Disservice.
Right.
You have a maitre d', sommelier.
You have people you get to know very well, and then a, you know, gaggle of people that's waiting on your every need. Mm-hmm. And then they're there throughout the meal, shaving truffles on your plate and, you know, decanting champagne and all these different things that we might be doing that you might not have seen anywhere else. You probably haven't seen anywhere else.
So another aspect that I've alluded to a couple times in introducing you is there are still very few women in the front of house, mm-hmm, positions of being a captain in a four-star restaurant. And in four-star restaurant, what are there, 10 four-star restaurants in New York now?
No, I think there may be only
five. Okay, so you're talking about the greatest restaurant city in the world. You're talking about the top five restaurants in,
right,
the greatest city. It's a very rarefied category we're talking about. But in that category, it is still a hugely male-dominated field.
Right.
What was it like being a woman in that position, breaking that barrier? And,
well,
and why do you think that barrier is there still?
Well, when I was at Per Se, there was only one other female captain in the city, and she was at Danielle, and she's now in Chicago, and she's wonderful. And now I know there's one at La Bernardin. There might be more. I felt very supported by the management at Per Se, and I think part of that is that it was a Californian restaurant, and then it was the French Laundry, and they brought a little bit more of that laid-back West Coast style as opposed to the more traditional French restaurants. That might be a little bit more male-dominated.
Well, so, but how did the customers react to you?
Well, I think in part because of the California style, people came in thinking that it was going to be a little bit of a different experience than,
uh-huh,
they might find at Le Grenouille or something. And occasionally I would have some guests that were a little bit older that seemed taken aback, but most people were comfortable. I knew my stuff, and you know, that became apparent.
You talk about in your book
the
side tip. You know, and just so what a side tip is that when you want to be really slick, you know, the guy gives a handshake, but he's really palming the guy 20, 50, 100
exactly.
bucks to
yeah.
say, hey, buddy, you know, take care
great
of me,
job.
Great
thanks.
Service,
yeah.
thanks so much. That you say that happens a lot less often with female captains than male captains.
I think it happens, yes, because there's something about someone slipping a woman money that feels like it's just been left on her bureau. And I think it's also something that's really done by men and not by women. Don't tip each other like that. It's just not something we do. And, in fact, it happened to me once, and it was really awkward. Mm-hmm. There was fumbling. Women, it's more with the verbal tip, which doesn't pay.
Well,
But it does feel good.
But hold on a second. You know, it's funny. I think that because there are restaurants that treat women differently. I mean, and I think that's changed a lot since Ruth Reichel's historic review of Le Cirque, where mm-hmm. she went as the female restaurant critic of the Times, and she was not spotted, and she talked about how she, as a woman, was sort of sent off to Siberia and had the wine list ripped from her hands.
Yeah.
Well, I've been, as a man, been sent off to Siberia, too, though. So, say that it's
but
just...
if you, as a server, know, in a place where maybe 20-30% of the patrons give you side tips, and zero of the women hosts give you side tips, is it really unfair for women to get less of that extra special service than men?
Well, I don't know.
That's a pretty tough question.
I know. Because, I don't know the answer.
Because I didn't get many of those, I don't really know how much other people were making.
Mm-hmm.
We were paid very well, and the tips that people left on their check were always wonderful. And women are good tippers. I'm not saying they're not good tippers. Don't do that little secret handshake thing.
But you talk about in your book how at some restaurants where it's maybe not a pool house and side tips don't go into the pool, that some waiters that, you know, male captains who are tipped would sometimes walk home with $700 in an evening, where female captains who didn't get those side tips would walk home with two.
Right. Well, that's more of the maitre d' and the sommelier situation,
sure.
where they feel like they're getting a little something extra.
Sure.
But hopefully that will change.
Well, here's how I hope it changes. I hope you ladies out there go and slip some side tips to people. and we'll pay attention in this business. I'll tell you, money talks in this business.
As a restaurant owner with lots of female captains on my floor.
Well, I just went into Fiamma last night. They just, you know, they have a new renovation. And they have all female captains.
Really?
Yeah, it's a female restaurant. It's great. All the managers, the sommelier is a woman. It's got a great vibe in there.
There are days you can walk into stage left and be waited on all females. It definitely happens sometimes.
You know, it's funny. One of these things that comes out in this is Mark and I have talked a lot about, and maybe we'll catch some heat. There's a guy named David Burke who's a great chef in a lot of ways. But one of the things that he got involved with that we didn't really care for so much was he was being heavily promoted for his restaurant, the Hawaiian Tropic Zone. Yeah, where the waitresses are, well, they're all female waiters. They happen to be wearing bikinis. But, you know, and I just think that really muddles the message in an industry where, you know, I think some people don't take women as seriously. And like Mark said, we're gender neutral in the restaurant completely. But I see sometimes that there's resistance from the customers to taking advice from a female sommelier in particular, you know.
Yeah. Well, we just all have to keep on doing what we're doing, and it'll change eventually.
It's already changed a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been open now for 15 years, and the difference now between now and 1992, tremendous difference in what people are expecting from waiters. Let's
take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about restaurant life overall, which is also covered in your book, which I think most people find really fascinating, is that people actually do go out for dinner at 1 o'clock in the morning, and you can find a good place. It's a different dynamic among restaurant people, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. Central Jersey 1450. It's 1144.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful emotional and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio. Central Jersey 1450. WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. We're talking with Phoebe Damrosch about her book, Service Included. Phoebe, restaurant people, we like the nightlife, we like to boogie, we like to disco. That was an old song. I guess some of us don't remember it, but there's
I remember it.
There's a social milieu of restaurant folks that I have always really enjoyed that happens a little later than most people, and you talk about that in your book. You want to discuss your sort of role in that, falling in love with that?
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, we ate at 4:20. That was when our family meal was, where all the people in the restaurant got together and ate. But then we didn't get out until 1 or 2. So by the end of the shift, we were hungry. And so we would go somewhere in the city that was open late. So that was part of it. It was just that we were hungry and needed food. And then also, restaurant workers are constantly moving from one restaurant to another. So if you want to go hang out with each other, you have to go visit each other in the restaurants.
Well, you talk about a place that I fell in love with when it first opened. Mark and I started going there. It was shortly after we first opened our first restaurant. It was Restaurant Blue Ribbon. Right. And for those of you who don't know it, I'm not going to tell you any more about it, so you don't crowd me out. No, that's not really true. It's on Sullivan Street, just north of Spring Street in Manhattan, and it's open for dinner 6 nights a week from 4 p.m. until 4 a.m. So you can go and have at 3:15 in the morning. You can go and have a 4-course dinner.
So all of you regular people keep going there at 8 o'clock.
Exactly.
And but restaurant folk will go there about 2 a.m.
But in case you're wondering, you can be from the front door of Stage Left Restaurant at Blue Ribbon with a beer in your hand and oysters being opened 42 minutes. 42 minutes.
Well, you know what I think is actually interesting is we had to travel all the way down to the West Village to get to Blue Ribbon, but there's this little ghetto of late-night restaurants opening up in the Columbus Circle area.
Oh, really?
Blue Ribbon's opening up there. Casa Lula, the cheese and wine bar, is open until 2, and there's Landmark and the Time Warner Center.
Right.
So that's really where you go to do late-night dining now.
Now, you talked about Landmark in your book when you guys did a little excursion of who had the best bone marrow in the city, and so you did a little bone marrow excursion.
Right. Taste test.
That's pretty decadent.
It was pretty disgusting by the end. No one wants to eat that much bone marrow.
It sounds exactly like what I would do at 2 o'clock in the morning on, go for a foray trying to see who's got the best bone marrow or hot dogs or, whichever.
So fun. And Blue Ribbon was by far the best.
Yeah, it is. It's on toast. It's amazing. Hey, let's talk about your excursion to one of the things that a great waiter does. A great waiter knows how to answer the questions of where stuff comes from, why it's special, how you got it, how it was made.
You and Andre went up to Jasper Hill in Vermont and took a trip together, and you talk about that a little bit in the book.
It's a dairy.
Why was that so important?
Well, I think especially now, everyone is so preoccupied with farmers, and I made that sound negative. I think it's a wonderful thing, and where all the ingredients comes from. And it felt so artificial to be doing that in the middle of Columbus Circle in this billion-dollar building. And I really wanted to go and see where it had come from, and also that my family's from Vermont, so I was sort of interested. So I went to see the Jasper Hill brothers and saw their whole cheese-making operation. And I also went to Animal Farm, which was this woman in Vermont who makes butter, and she had 6 cows. And we were all supposed to know the names of the cows, and they were Lulu and Lightning.
You were supposed to know that. You were supposed to know that as employees of the restaurant.
Yeah, that was in our training material.
Cool
the name
stuff.
Of these 6 cows. It was great butter.
Would they have sent you a notice if one of the cows passed on?
Actually, when we got there, we found out that some of them had. They hadn't passed on, but they'd retired, and so they were in the other field.
Sometimes
you, new cows.
You can only produce milk for so long.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that I find, and I love to go on these little excursions myself to visit people who are producing some of the products that we're doing. One of the things that I find that's almost shocking when you get to some of these production farms is that it's the life work of 2 or 3 or 4 people frequently.
Right.
With hardly anybody helping them, and they just work dawn to dusk to produce this, what we think must be a worldwide abundance of food, but it's just not. It's just, there's a finite quality of these specific products.
The other thing I think is interesting is when you go visit winemakers and you think of it as this luxury ingredient, and then you go and they have mud on their boots and they get up they're farmers.
Yeah.
And we forget that.
Yeah. Well, there's a farm. If you want to visit with the best winery on the East Coast, we've had them on as guests before, but Barbara Shinn and David Page, who own Home Restaurant in Manhattan, own a winery up on Long Island.
Yep.
And if you want to just go and see what the hard work is all about, It's funny, I watched them transfer from, you know, pasty white skinny restaurant people like us. And, you know, they owned the farm for a couple of years making wine, and they're buff.
Now they have, like, muscles and stuff.
I don't think Dan Barber got that same bug. He's still looking pretty thin.
You know, and on the West Coast, for you folks out there in Napa, there's a place, a guy by the name of George Hendry, who's been a farmer out there for his entire life. And he's just a farmer. It's what he does, and he's a great winemaker. But first and foremost, he farms his grapes.
And to have a connection with that as a server or as anybody in a restaurant business, I think that we agree with you, Phoebe, that the connection between the restaurant and the farm or the winemaker is growing because the customers want to know where their food came from. They want to put a name to it.
We should start a company for waiter field trips.
Oh, I
like
the idea.
I love it.
I like the idea. Listen, when we come back, I want to talk about a controversial policy that Thomas Keller started where there's no more tipping at Per Se. And I want to talk about
the name of your book.
And I want to talk about what it's like when a restaurant of that caliber goes to a service-included model. We'll be back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:54.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody. It's the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. We're talking with Phoebe Damrosch. Her book is Service-Included, Four-Star Secrets of an Eavesdropping Waiter. You can pick it up at our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Phoebe, I made allusion to, before the break, I promised we'd talk about something Thomas, owner of Per Se, Thomas Keller did. He switched to from a gratuity-based system in a pool house where all the waiters share tips, which is what goes on in all the fine restaurants in America, to a more European model where there's just 20% added to the check, and then he pays people an hourly wage.
And don't think we didn't notice that that's around the time that you left the restaurant.
So why did he do that, and what were the ramifications of it? We only have a couple of minutes, but I'd love to get your take on it.
Well, he did that to change the discrepancy between what the kitchen workers were paid and what the front of the house was paid, trying to make it a little bit more fair. I think it's a really good idea. I mean, it's professional pay for professional people. We also had health and dental and 401k. And I think if you pay people like professionals, you'll attract, you know, the best servers you can. I had a little bit of a problem with it because it wasn't what I agreed to when I took the job. I felt like it was kind of thrown in there.
What happened? The waiter's pay went down.
Well, ostensibly, it looked like they would when I did the numbers for myself. But from what I hear from my friends that are still there, a lot of people are leaving money on top of the 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're paying $20,000 for your meal, maybe an extra $1,000, $2,000 isn't much.
Sooner or later, you're talking about real money.
Much, yeah.
Right.
You
know.
$1,000 here, $1,000 there.
Right.
You know, sooner or later.
But I think it really worked out for them, and I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
So, Phoebe, I have a question for you.
Yes.
So I read the book.
Yeah.
I met you guys a couple of years ago. You and Andre, were having kind of a secret romance at the time. So was Stage Left one of your little clandestine trips?
No, if you notice, it was four of us, and two of them were coworkers.
Yes.
No, at that point we were out.
You guys were already out and
right.
doing restaurants together, out
right.
in the open.
And then we went back and ate at Per Se after we left, and then it was obvious to everyone.
Yeah, they figured it out.
I think they figured it out when they realized that he was doing all the wine service at all of my tables all the time.
I want all my staff to listen. If you're dating each other, I don't want to know.
Yeah, it's much, much better.
Go to Per Se in Manhattan for dinner. I don't want to know about it. Well, Phoebe, your book was tremendous. We really enjoyed it, and I want to thank you for coming on the show with us.
Thanks for having such a great show.
It was great. Thanks, Phoebe. We're going to, just so you know, we're going to talk in the next couple of weeks, bring up the occasional tip in your book, and Francis and I are going to talk about it.
Hey, so you're more in tune with all the restaurant folks in Manhattan even more than we are. Do people listen to our show in this world?
We talk about it all the time to our friends.
Do you really?
Yeah. We've been listening to it for a long time.
Well, I know. We were surprised when you popped up on our door and they're like, the sommelier from Per Se is on table 42.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of stuff coming out of Jersey. You have Gary Vaynerchuk's show, too.
Yeah.
That's
true. His video podcast is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Hey, it is the Garden State for a reason. That's all I have to say. Phoebe, thanks so much for being on the show. I hope you've all enjoyed the hour with
thanks,
the Restaurant
Phoebe.
Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys. WCTC, time is 12 noon.